You know, I think for any mom, it's like, if you want to start a business or you have a business right now, just be realistic about your expectations and what you need to accomplish in a day. I think people underestimate what they can get done in a year, but overestimate maybe what can be done in a single day. But I always just try to keep it really simple and really realistic in terms of like, these are the three things that I can accomplish today and keep the ball moving forward. Sometimes I feel like I'm kicking it forward because I'm like, oh my God, like it's so hard to keep things moving. But as long as I'm keeping things moving forward, then that is doing enough.
I'm Tom Ward, and over the last couple years, I've had the chance to sit down with some of the biggest celebrities and influencers in the world. What I've always found most fascinating is the stories of the businesses that they've built behind the scenes. On this show, you'll get an inside look of what it takes to build a successful business from some of the biggest celebrities, business people, and up-and-coming entrepreneurs in the world. This is the Tom Ward Show.
Hey guys, welcome to the Tom Ward Show, where every week we talk to the most successful people in the world who teach us how to level up our lives. It's time to level up. Today we've got Emily DiDonato. She's an entrepreneur, content creator, and just kind of general all-around badass.
Oh, thank you.
You really are. You've been successful in, you know, really almost everything you've done, and we'll talk about it. And there's been some struggles along the way, which I want to talk about too, but I want to start with your origin story, because it was so funny to me, because it's unrelatable to me and everyone watching or listening to this. So I want to set this up because I want to talk about it, right? So you're at the mall, you're 16 years old, you're a kid, you're there with your mom. There's some fashion show thing going on. Somebody grabs you and says like, hey, you should be a part of this. You do it. And like a week later, you're a working model in New York City.
That is correct. Yes. I was at the Danbury Mall in Connecticut, and there was like this modeling competition. Like there was this booth happening. And whenever I tell this story, people are like, wait, I've seen that. Like, I always think it's a scam. I think a lot of them probably are scams, but shockingly, this one was not. There were agents there from all the top modeling agencies in New York City. And it was just me and my mom. I remember I was wearing like sneakers and just like gym shorts. Like I was so casual. I mean, I was a teenager, like shopping with my mom at the mall. And I went up there on like stage and walked around, and they were like, after that, all of them gave their cards to my mom. They're like, we want to meet you in the city. We want, like, you could really be something. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I mean, I was 16 years old. I was like, I want to do that.
Of course.
And then we met with all these agencies in New York City, and I signed with one. And I was literally working like a week later. It was pretty wild. I was shooting like a Ralph Lauren campaign.
So, okay, a couple questions, right? First of all, you're in high school. What do your friends say? Are you the shit in high school at this point? Like, you're shooting a Ralph Lauren ad, like no one else in your high school is doing that kind of stuff. It's pretty cool. Like, were you like instantly super popular?
I don't know. It didn't change that much for me. Actually, it was weird. Like, I remember when I would tell my friends about it, it was just so foreign. I grew up in a really small town in upstate New York. So I think everyone, when I told people, I was like, oh, I'm modeling now. Or I remember when I was in my first magazine and I like brought it to school, I think people were just like, huh, interesting. And I was like, yeah, right. So I'd be like missing school and going to Morocco to shoot like some editorial, and then I'd just come back, and then I'd be like playing lacrosse and on my sports teams the next day, like nothing ever happened. I was like living like a Hannah Montana double life fully.
So strange. So that's that. Okay. Now, I can only imagine, because modeling is a grind. I know I've interviewed some people in the fashion business. I don't know much about fashion, but I've been to fashion, you know, shows, and kind of understand a little bit what goes on. Modeling, you know, if you're watching or listening to this, is a grind for 99% of models out there. They come from all over the world. They come here to work. They're doing runway work just to get seen, a lot of times not even getting paid. Mm-hmm. Now, here comes young Emily. I'm that model from Eastern Europe. I'm working my ass off. All of a sudden, we've got fresh-faced Emily in the Ralph Lauren ad. I want to kill her. I mean,
maybe, yeah.
What was the vibe from the experienced models? Like, were they catty or mean to you?
No, actually, I think because I was so green, like I'll never forget, like one of the first days I was on set for Maybelline, because I was one of their global spokesmodels for 13 years. I was on set with like Adriana Lima, Christy Turlington, and I had been modeling for like 6 months tops. Like, I was so green though, and I was so young that I think, and I was friendly and super enthusiastic. I think people more so were like excited and willing to kind of take me under their wing and be like, show me the ropes. I'll put it that way. I felt like a really nice support. I think especially now that I'm a 32-year-old woman, if I saw a 16, 17-year-old walk onto set, I also would be kind of like motherly towards her and like, here, let me guide you and show you how this works. I actually did not get a cattiness, which now looking back now, I'm kind of glad you brought that up because I'm like, yeah, I actually did not feel that way towards other women and they did not towards me, I felt.
So help me understand, as a guy who doesn't know modeling, there's a pecking order in any kind of industry, right? Mm-hmm. So are the top of the food chain? You're doing cosmetic stuff, right, too. Are you up right there? Where does like brand work stuff fit in? Like, what's the pecking order?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to what you were saying earlier. Like a lot of there's kind of the runway shows and the models who kind of live in that world. And a lot of girls are doing runway show after runway show after runway show to hopefully get discovered in hopes to eventually get paid to do ad campaigns, to get cosmetic contracts. So same goes for editorial. Like if you see a cover of Vogue, an editorial in Vogue, models don't get paid for that. You don't really get paid to walk in runway shows either. At most, you might get trade, so some clothes. So there's not a lot of money in runway or editorial, but you do that almost like as an investment in your career. And then in hopes that someone sees you, they discover you, they're inspired by you, and then they bring you over for the paid campaign or for some sort of commercial, whatever it might be. But for a long time, a lot of people kind of looked down upon commercial modeling. So call that, you know, being an Maybelline ad, even Victoria's Secret for a long time was considered commercial. So if you did commercial work, then you weren't necessarily doing, you know, runway shows and this sort of high fashion work. It was hard to kind of do both worlds. I always kind of tried to do both worlds, and I did. I did a mixture of everything. So there's not necessarily a pecking order. I feel like there's just some girls who focus more on money jobs. They're more quote unquote commercial. So you might do cosmetic, fragrance, Victoria's Secret, lots of catalog, but that's where the money is. And then the high fashion stuff is more like prestige in a way, but you're not really going to make money that way.
Oh, okay. And I learned something else too, doing homework for this. I know about fashion now. So explain to me, because I'm sure I know any guy watching this doesn't understand. I'm guessing maybe a lot of women don't either. So explain to me why it's hard for a designer to have you walk the runway for them. You seem super thin. You seem tall. Okay, sign her up. Let's put some clothes on. And let's go sell some clothes. But
the size for a very long time. I mean, when I first started modeling, which was in 2008, which makes me sound and feel so old, all models looked exactly the same. Everyone was, you know, 5'10 to 6 foot, Eastern European, blonde hair, blue eyes, and all a 00. There was nothing else. That has changed.
What is a 00? Isn't zero the lowest? There's a
zero? They can go even smaller. Yes, it's crazy. Even for me to walk in and I was like 5'10 brunette with blue eyes and like a size 4 was like exotic, wild stuff. That was back then. Luckily, things have changed quite a lot since then. And like, there's so many different shapes and sizes and ethnicities and ages, which is wonderful. But back then it was very kind of cookie cutter. So I didn't do a lot of runway shows in the beginning of my career because that was just the way the cookie crumbled. It was just like, you're more of a commercial girl. And I mean, I would get, you know, the whole random, many different excuses, too pretty, too American, too smiley, too curvy, too athletic. Like there's always a reason why someone won't book you, but you only need a few people to say yes. And then that positive momentum kind of kicks in.
Now talk about, so I remember, I'll never forget this. I was in New York years ago for work and I'm staying in a hotel and I'm clueless, right? I didn't realize it was New York Fashion Week. I remember trying to book a hotel and like, it was like the fourth one I tried, I finally booked. So anyway, then I realized when I get there, okay. So I'm walking to my room and I'm walking down the hallway and there's a room and the door's wide open. There's like music playing and I walk by and there's like 10 beautiful women there. I'm like, so I immediately my eyes drawn and I look and I crept a little bit and I looked, they're obviously models for New York Fashion Week. But what struck me was everyone was smoking. There were Diet Coke bottles and vodka bottles everywhere. And it led me to think, like, is that the diet? And, like, what's the diet in that world? And, like, what were you doing to maintain a weight? Were you doing it health, you know, in a healthy way, or what was kind of the vibe?
I mean, I think, you know, especially at, you know, at different times in the modeling industry, especially when the standard was a 00, of course, there are some girls who are just unicorns who are just like that. And then, of course, there are people who take extremes to stay thin. And I definitely found myself like going to those extremes, over exercising, eating very little. You know, I decided not to go to college when I was 17 years old and pursue modeling full time. So I felt a lot of pressure to make it work and be successful at it. So I think that's when it kind of kicked in for me, where I was like, if I want this to work, then I really need to conform to what this in the, these industry standards. So I was exercising for hours and hours a day just to like be thin and stay thin. And it was totally something that was not sustainable whatsoever. But I did it, and I know many other girls have and do the same thing. But I gave up on that because, like I said, it was not sustainable and I looked awful.
So, you know, looks fade, right? You know, but mm-hmm. we all realize that. But modeling, it's a whole different, you know, timeline. So, you know, a lot of times I heard you say, you know, you kind of compare yourself to athletes where, and it makes sense, right? It's a limited shelf life, you know, it, you know, but the big difference is, you know, with science and medicine and stuff now, you know, look at LeBron James. As long as, you know, barring serious injuries, if you take care of yourself, look at Tom Brady, you can play until you're 40 now, which used to be unheard of. You're not seeing, you know, girls at 40, you know, walking the runway. What's the shelf life for a professional working model? You know?
Well, it's kind of changed a little bit. I do feel like now I see that some girls' careers are going on 30 plus. But when I first started, it was like, once you're 30, game is over. Like, that's it. But that's definitely changed because a bunch of girls, I mean, look at Giselle. She's 42 and she's still going. And there's people like Irina Shayk who are in her later 30s. It's definitely changed quite a bit, especially since I started. When I started modeling, everyone was like 16, which I'm kind of glad that at least it's going up a little bit, because like putting a 16-year-old in women's clothes, it's kind of ridiculous.
So what's your mentality? You seem pretty driven and you had this kind of, hey, you took it seriously. You know, hey, I'm not going to college. I'm doing this for real. This isn't a hobby. Like, this is what I'm doing. You know the lay of the land. Okay, 30. If I can make it to 30, like, that's a huge win. Maybe I don't.
Yeah.
So, like, I got to cash in now. Is the clock always running in a model's head?
I mean, I think, at least for me, I can't speak for others, but because of the conversation around it, sure. Like, even when I was 17, 18 years old, you know, people would be like, what are you going to do after this? What are you going to do when you turn 30 and it's all over? And it's funny because now that I'm 32, I'm like, so much is happening now. I feel like my life and like my professional life is almost just getting going. But yes, I definitely thought about it like that. Like, I more so thought about it like, how can I milk this in every single way possible while I'm in like the peak of my career? And probably similar to the way that an athlete would think about it. But I was like, I just want, and I remember I would say this to anyone I worked with, like my agents and, you know, agencies, like, I just want to make money. I'd be like, I just want to make money. You know, I didn't grow up with a lot of money. My dad was a New York City firefighter. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And I wasn't poor by any means, but I just remember really craving and wanting that financial independence and freedom. And I succeeded at that. And that was like my main goal. I was like, I don't care if I'm famous. I don't care if I'm doing the cool stuff. I just want to make money. And that was my main focus.
It seems like, so it's funny, you know, I write for Forbes. I'm a contributor there. And around, I think at the same time, I think you got started, maybe 2015-ish, I heard the term influencer marketing. And mm-hmm. I had a corporate career. I was in my, I think, mid-30s. I had no idea what an influencer was. I didn't watch YouTube. And I started covering it because I was fascinated by it. I think around the same time, right, that you started creating content, became a content creator. Was it just because, like, you know, people go and do it for different reasons? I just like social media. I'm on my phone all the time. I might as well just make something. Or were you thinking, like, down the road, like, hey, you know, I see other people making like really good money in it. This is something I could do and set myself up for post modeling. This could be actually like a job. Is that how you look
at it? Yeah, that is kind of how I thought about it. I mean, I was still extremely busy modeling at the time that I started working on content creation, but I just had this pivotal moment. I'll never forget it. Like, when influencers started showing up on sets, like, they would be, you know, on a Maybelline shoot, or they would be in random shoots. And I remember at that time, you know, 2014, 2015, everyone was very like poo poo on influencers, like, ew, influencers, they'll never be models, they'll never be us. But I just remember hearing whispers of like how influencers were making my day rate with like a single post on Instagram or even a blog post, because this was when bloggers were really big.
I was like,
wait, I'm shooting for 10, 12 hours a day in a studio or flying all the way to Milan for something, and you guys are doing that at home or like just sharing your outfit every day or what you're eating for breakfast. I remember being like, I can do that. So I started doing it. And mind you, when I did start doing it and I started my YouTube channel and I was really active on there, I would go to set as a model and people would be like, seriously, Emily, are you like a vlogger now? Like, okay, like I'll be in your vlog. And I didn't care. I was like, yeah, I am. I'm doing this now. And I'm so glad that I did, because especially now that I'm like a mom, I just had a baby three months ago. And people are like asking me to do sponsored posts and this and that. And it just opened up a whole other category and work stream for me that not only I enjoy, because I can do it from home, I can talk about things that I'm actually interested in. I have more agency on my life and what I share, and what it looks like and how I create it. It's also, it can be super lucrative for people.
It's so funny because I got it like you. This is back in 2015. I know what the lay of the land. Now it goes, of course, you make a career. There's influencers, there's Instagram. There's real businesses. There's even like courses you could take on like how to become an influencer.
But totally. Then,
I'll never forget Jake Paul's. I interviewed Kate Hudson. I only got like 5 minutes with her, but I guess the PR person liked it and pitched me, hey, you got to interview this other client. I go, who? Jake Paul. I go, who the fuck is Jake Paul? He was a kid on a Nickelodeon show, right? So he goes, just check him out.
Yeah.
I go, who is this kid with 20 million followers that I've never even heard of? Like, I'm interested. So I sit down with him and I'm like, wait a minute. This is no dumb kid. Like, he's running a multi-million dollar business and he's got a 10-person team behind him. And if I didn't know that, I'm guessing a lot of people don't know. So I started interviewing these kids, quote unquote kids, because I got it. No one was covering them. And everyone thought I was insane. My friends thought I was insane. They go, why would you want to talk to a 17-year-old kid? I go, because he's got a bigger business than I'll ever have. Like, I'm interested.
Yeah.
Maybe I can learn something.
Interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
Totally. It's now, really interesting.
Now you, again, success right off the bat, right? So you, okay, I'm going to try this YouTube thing. Some of your first videos got millions of views. Before we get into creator side, okay, success at a very high level as a model. I'm going to try this creator thing. Very high level of success there. You're obviously very beautiful, but let's be real. There's a lot of beautiful models all over the place, right? Who haven't had a career that you had. What do you think, what personality trait or habits do you have that made you succeed in these two areas and in your current business where others haven't? Like, what is it about you?
I mean, I think like, at least when I think about the content creation stuff and YouTube and being an influencer, if you will, it was a willingness to try and a willingness to look kind of dumb. Like, I think people thought that I was silly and it cheapened my brand for sharing so much and sharing my life and even sharing like more intimate struggles and things that I went through. I think it takes like a level of like bravery and courage to branch out like that. So I feel like you're totally right that like anyone could do this. Any model could share and all of that stuff. But it takes like a willingness to put yourself out there. I remember when I put out my first video, I was like, I don't know if anyone's going to watch this. It might be my mom watching it on loop 2000 times, but it counts and I'm doing it.
And did you have the same, it seems like the other thing that you have is a focus, and I've interviewed, I mean, a couple hundred very successful people in all kinds of different industries, and you have it too, and just like the rest of them do, where there's almost like an inner bar that you set at what you're going to take on, and that's that. It's like, that's it. Like, okay,
yeah,
I'm gonna be a model. Like, I'm gonna not go to college, so I'm gonna miss a lot of stuff. I'm gonna fucking make this work. Okay,
exactly.
They're gonna make fun of me and everyone's gonna laugh, and you know, who does she think she is? No one cares about her life. I'm gonna fucking do it. I'm going to do it at a high level. Like, yep. Is that how you view kind of your careers and the projects you take on?
Yes, because I think for me, when I take something on or if I commit to it, I really want to see if I can be good at it. I think, you know, I grew up playing sports. I don't like to do anything and not be good at it. Like, that's just not my style. So I'm like, all right, how can I be the best at this? How can I do a really good job? And how do I enjoy it along the way? That's really important for me too. It's like, I want to enjoy what I'm doing. And when I went into content creation and Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok and all these things, I realized that I like making content. I actually even more so enjoy editing content, which was super surprising to me. I love sitting in front of like Final Cut Pro for hours and hours and hours. I was like, it's so amazing to learn like all the different things that you enjoy. So that's kind of my take on it. If I'm going to put time into something, I want to be good at it. I'm not going to half-ass it.
What do you think? Because you've done both sides, right? You're a content creator. You're also, you know, a working model too.
Mm-hmm.
What is a model in 2023? Is a girl, and this, I don't mean this to come off sexist in any way. I hope it doesn't.
Yeah.
But does a girl wearing a bikini on TikTok with her boyfriend taking a video of her, is that, you know, but maybe it's a brand deal. Maybe she got an energy drink in her hand. Is that a model? Yeah. Or what is that?
I would say that is a model. Like, I think that people like to poo-poo on like an Instagram model, right? For a long time, it was like the Instagram model. But I think if you're wearing something and you're advertising something and it looks so easy, right? You see the girl standing there with the can or whatever it might be. But there is thought and there is time and there is effort put into that. The only difference is you don't have a massive set with a photographer and a videographer and a hair and a makeup. Like with an influencer or call it a model, you just end up doing everything yourself in this modern day age with social media. There's a lot less cooks in the kitchen, but at the end of the day, you're still doing the same thing. You are advertising for a brand. So I would put them in the bucket of a model.
Now, I'm going to do a service to boyfriends and husbands everywhere, and really for women, right? So while we're on the subject, how can you have your partners, all the partners in the world out there, take better pictures of you, right? My wife always says this. She's always like, you take horrible pictures. I want a nice picture with the kids. And like, it looks terrible. Like the lighting's bad, or like my way, you know, it's not the right angle. Give us some simple things to do on our phone to take better pictures of our partners. What can we do?
I think a few things there. Number one, more is more when it comes to photos. Take a million. She'll find one that she likes. Like, it's just kind of harboring the moment. And anytime you see a sweet moment, like I'm always like, and I do that for my husband because I just take a million photos of him all the time with our kids. And they're like, oh my God, it's so cute. But I'm like, he just doesn't think like that. It's just not top of mind for him to like take a million photos. Like, how do you not think about that? But also I think for myself, I know that I need to remind my husband of that. And whenever I have like a cute outfit on or whatever it might be, first of all, I get it out of the way immediately. Like, we're going out to eat or we're doing something. I'm like, before we go on the restaurant, before we do anything, we're taking a cute photo of me in this outfit. And I have to hold his hand. I literally set everything up. I'm like, here's the background. I'll put him in the background first. I'm like, pose like this, stand here. I'll take it first so that you can see the reference. That's the reference. Now you stand here and I'll sit there. Like, it's a full hand-holding process, but if you want to get the shot, sometimes that is what needs to be done. But more so on the fly, my number one piece of advice is like, more is more. As a husband, just take as many photos as you can so that she can look back. And even if she doesn't post it or use it, she'll have the moment. Especially with kids, there's never enough.
Is there a lighting thing we have to pay attention to? Is there, they should be in the frame in a certain way, you know, like,
lighting is definitely very important. Ideally, natural light. Ideally, facing a window is even better if you're not outside. Fluorescent light is a no. So usually indoors, those like really icky, sad office type light, that is not the time to snap a photo. And best times of day are sunrise or sunset. Most people are probably going to be out during sunset more than sunrise. So,
okay. I think, if that's anything, I mean, if somebody just gets that from this interview, I think you've done a service.
Definitely.
So you're creating content, you're still modeling. When does motherhood become like a thing? Like, okay, you know, I want to start a, because it sounds like you know, you're well thought out. It's like, at some point I want to have kids and there's only a certain amount of time I could do that in. I also kind of want to create a company, you know, and talk about that. Were they, were those thoughts together, or what's the timeline, right? You're modeling, you're creating content. What's next?
I mean, I always knew that I wanted to have children, and, you know, I had been dating my now husband for a couple of years, but creating my own brand came first, like Cubby came first, and then children kind of came on its own. I knew that my children were going to happen at some point in my 30s, ideally my early 30s, but I started working on my skincare brand Cubby when I was probably like 27, 28 years old. And that was like my main focus, you know, for a couple of years there. So that was kind of how things sequenced out, but I literally launched Cubby in March of 2021. And I also found out I was pregnant like a week later, and it was not planned that way. But that is the way the cookie crumbled. So,
so let's talk Cubby first, right? So, you know, I say this all the time, whenever I like talk to somebody in like fashion, I say like, you would have to have rocks in your head to create a new jeans brand, say, right? Like every jean in the world has been created. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every fall you go to Nordstrom's and there's some new hot jean brand that wasn't there the year before. So like, who knows? It could pop. Like, it's going to be hard, but it could pop. I would say the same thing to you. Like with cosmetics, it's like, hasn't every skincare product already been launched? And like, did people advise you against it? Like, what was the problem you were solving? Like, what was the need in the market that you saw?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I started modeling and my skin was my job and my life. And I came from the school of thought that more was more when it came to skincare. And like you're saying, skincare and beauty in particular, it's a super crowded space. But I would layer everything onto my face that was ever recommended to me, and my skin sucked. It was so dry. It was so red. It was so irritated. And I grew up, you know, when I first started focusing on skincare, I grew up in the world of like, there was Clinique's three-step routine, Proactiv's three-step routine. And I was like, there really should be a modernized, clean version of these three-step routines that could really work across all skin types, because I was craving simplicity and effectiveness and just a super simple routine, because that's how I kind of operated my life. I was like, I don't need all of these steps. They're hurting my skin. My skin is so sensitive. How do I simplify it, but still keep a level of effectiveness and keep it super straightforward for people? Because I think it had gotten super complicated. It was the height of Korean beauty when people were using 10, 12 plus steps in their routines. It had gotten really out of hand at one point. And I was like, there has to be a simpler and better way. And that's how Cubby came into the picture. And we launched our original routine, which was our first of all cleanser, our next step vitamin C serum, and our last but not least moisturizer. And as you can see from the names, they reference the order you're supposed to use them in. It's just three steps. Super simple with super high quality ingredients.
So when does the idea come? And then what's the timetable from, I got the idea and I hook up my business partner to it launches. Mm-hmm. Like, what's that look like?
Oh my gosh. Well, her and I started talking about this in 2018. The way that it started was her and I were on a trip together in Iceland and we were getting ready together, and her and I were laughing because we both had like massive skincare bags like this big of products, and we like slammed them on the table and we were talking about what we were using, and we both had no idea what we were talking about. I was like, oh, I use this. I don't know why. It really hurts my skin. She's like, oh, I use this. I don't really know why, but I don't know. And we're mixing all these things together and we were like, this is ridiculous. We're like two women who so badly want to take care of ourselves, but have no idea where to start. And why isn't there just a super simple way to do this? And so that we're not traveling with like 3 pounds of cosmetics in our bag and skincare. So her and I started talking about that together in 2018. We started kind of swapping emails about it and chatting. And then we launched in March of 2021. So it was quite a long process.
I mean, I'm guessing finding someone to make it and kind of figuring that out, was that the hardest part? Like, did you even
that
know
was hard.
How to navigate that?
So we partnered with a dermatologist, Dr. Julie Rusak in New York, and she was super important and pivotal in terms of like helping us with the formulations and what ingredients we wanted to focus on. But yes, you're correct. Finding someone to make the products. Listen, anyone can Google a lab. And what most people do is you'll get off the shelf products, meaning white label. You can buy a product that already exists and slap your label on it. That was not an option for us. We probably did almost 15 iterations of each of the products, because every time we got an iteration of the products, we would send it out to friends and family, have them do a survey, let us know what they thought, how it felt on their skin, if they saw a difference. So this is why it took us so long. Like, I think for our cleanser, we even went over 15 iterations of it. That product's already won 3 beauty awards. So I'm always like, it was worth it, but it took a really long time because we were constantly getting real-time feedback. One of the labs was like, we're done working with you. You're way too difficult. Like, you want too many iterations of it, but I'm still am glad that we did it because it panned out.
So you come up with this idea. Okay, mm-hmm. We're going through it. How are you funding this the whole time? Is it you're just working to support this project? You guys are just, are you still modeling? Are you still doing content?
And I was still modeling, yes. Yeah, pretty much. I was still modeling at the time. I was super busy with that. I was very active on YouTube. And yes, myself and my co-founder, who's my best friend, we self-funded the business. And then about a couple months into it, then we did a really small friends and family raise. And that was it.
Now, I think that's a great lesson. And I interviewed Deepika Mutyala.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Live Tinted. It's Live Tinted, right? Not Live Tinted.
Live Tinted, yeah.
Live Tinted, right? She's awesome. And she just had a great post. We'll insert post here, but she basically said, like, this was not an overnight success at all. Like, mm-hmm. I was making a YouTube video, that went viral. I knew, you know, there was a need for this kind of makeup. And she had mm-hmm. to do the same thing. Like, who's going to manufacture it? What's it going to, you know, what ingredients is it going to have? You know, it kind of go through. So it was like,
oh, yeah.
No, it didn't just happen. This is years and years of work that you didn't see to get that product on the shelf. Like, what advice do you have for the young entrepreneur or the aspiring entrepreneur watching or listening to this who goes, mm-hmm. It ain't working. Maybe it was a terrible idea. I'm burning through cash. Like, what advice do you have for them? Do you have any inspiration?
I mean, I think that like the first piece of advice that I would have was like, I think when you start a business, you think that you need a lot more than you actually do. I think when you start a business, you're like, I need an agency to help with that. I need a partner. I need lots of money. I need, you know, employees. And that is not true. You need you and like someone else who's super passionate about the business. Sometimes it's just you, but like myself and my best friend, Christina, and my co-founder, we always laugh. We're like, some of our most successful moments in Covey and happiest moments are things that her and I pulled off ourselves. Like, we were just so scrappy and like emailing people and harassing people to help us and like do things. And it was just her and I. Now, obviously, there's more infrastructure to the brand and we have employees and it's a little bit different, but a lot of like the roots and the core of the business and some of our most successful moments are just her and I grinding it out. So my point there is like, I think when you start a business, you think like, oh my God, I need all this infrastructure and partners and people. And you actually don't, like, start small and start just you kind of chugging your way through, because that's kind of more of a long-term sustainable way to be successful, in my opinion.
So you work so hard to get this thing together and years are going by, right? Pursuing this.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, you're getting depressed at times and this, you know, and
definitely.
You're slugging through and you're getting, you know, whatever, but you keep at it. So you've got the product. Great. Now what? Like, what was your expectation? Did you think, I think a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs at any age think, hey, I got the product. I just got to put it on the shelf, right? And the cash register rings, like, which is not the case in any real business. Mm-mm. So
no, making the product is almost the easy part. Then yep. It's like, how do you get people to care and how do you get them to listen and how do you get them to buy it and try it and hopefully love it?
Was that going on as you're developing the product?
No. When we're developing the product, because I think anyone, when you start a brand and you're passionate about it, you're just like, this is the best thing ever. Like, these are the best products ever. And then you get to the point where you're like, wait, how do I make everyone else know that? And that's when your business really begins.
So what did those early days look like? How did you convince people that this was the product for them?
Yeah. I mean, in the beginning, it was a lot of organic, like, I have a really large network of friends and models and influencers and celebrities. And it was a lot of like getting it to them. It was a lot of me creating my own content and creating all of our ads, which I just did pretty much by myself in my bathroom, like really just focusing on what we are about, what made us special, what it does to your skin. And that was a lot of me just like kind of plowing through that and like getting that created into ads, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. And a lot of just organic, you know, for Covey, luckily we had a bunch of people come in really early on. We call our Covey flock, and they're like our biggest supporters. And that's the beautiful thing about a brand. You only need like 100 people that are like in love with you, and then they'll do the work for you. They spread all the love and info that you need.
You are so right. And I think it was, I forget the professor, but he says it's 1,000, but
1,000 fans. Yeah.
Yeah. Really. I mean, in any business, you could have a heating and air conditioning business. You could have a YouTube channel, whatever. You just need 1,000 people who are willing to support you financially, not just who hit like, right? But who are willing, yep, to buy some your service, your product.
Totally. Right?
That's really all you need. Or even, yeah, take it down. Maybe it's 100. Maybe he's shooting too high. Maybe it's 100.
Exactly.
And everything compounds, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even for our business, we have subscribers to our products and to our routines. And they're like our number one fans. Like every single month, they're just replenishing their products and they just love them and rate the most glowing and amazing reviews of how life-changing Covey has been for them. And that's like, that's the core of the business.
Okay, so I'm a young, fresh entrepreneur watching or listening to this. And I go, okay, I got my product, but unfortunately, I don't know anyone famous and I'm not a good content creator and don't have a following. So that doesn't help. Help me. Help them. How can they get that initial flock? Like, what are some real things they could do to attract those people? Like, how do you find those initial people to believe in you?
I mean, I feel like from the start, you can start with your friends and family, start there, convert them, get them to convert their friends and family. I'm like, that's like the old school, like, sure, word of mouth, truly. But I think in today's day and age, social media is going to be your number one best bet. And these days, it's going to be TikTok. It used to be Instagram, but going viral on Instagram is just not a thing anymore. But TikTok, the ability to go viral there and get new people to see your content, if I was starting over, I see entrepreneurs on there all the time. And now there's TikTok shop where you could have, yes, your own shop. And I'm sitting here watching these kids like pack these t-shirts and whatever they're making. I'm fully invested. When you get people fully invested in like your business and your brand, the behind the scenes of it, and if you're willing to share what really goes on and do that on TikTok, that's what I would do.
Dude, these hats, I had a designer I interviewed. I don't know. I don't think he wants to be associated that he did them, but he designed some merch for me. And same thing, TikTok shop. And it's like,
yeah,
first of all, it's incredible for the buyer because I think the hat's $40. But I guess it's maybe if you just set up a shop, the shopper gets 30% off and free shipping, but I still, yeah, get $40 and the shipping costs covered. So they're eating that TikTok. It's like, oh my God, what a great time to buy something or sell something on TikTok.
I have bought so many things from TikTok shop. I love it.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. Yeah. TikTok is definitely the place to be.
That's the place.
You still have to play in all those areas.
Oh, you do.
That's another thing. You know what? That's another thing I wanted to talk to you about. So you were early on with this. When I heard you say that social media is just a part of modeling now, and you know, it is what it is. Like, how big is that? If I'm what do you even call the people who hire the models? Like, what is their job title at Maybelline?
An agent.
Okay. So I'm an agent and I'm looking at pictures of models, right? To, you know, model my product. Is there their Instagram following and TikTok following,
yes,
on that sheet now?
Yes. That is very important now.
Oh, wow. And, you know, equal looks and experience, they're going to go with the bigger following person, correct?
For sure. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, they want you to post, they want you to share. Maybe now that's part of deals is like, you know, you show up for the photo shoot for the brand, but they'll also want you to post behind the scenes, create your own content, create a video. The deal goes much broader than just showing up for a photo shoot now. So yeah, the following absolutely matters.
Now, you're an entrepreneur. I heard Kevin Hart say this, or I heard a story about him. I don't know if it's true, but Howard Stern was talking about it and it stuck with me. He was saying that movie studios go bonkers for Kevin Hart because he has such a, well, I mean, he's a great actor. He sells movie tickets. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's talented, but also he's got the social media following, which separates him from most actors, right, out there. So they're always going to him, just like you said. Hey, here's $20 million to star in the movie, and we need you posting about it. You know, do TikToks behind the scenes or you're in your trailer. And he goes, $20 million is for me to star in the movie. You want the social media package? That's a whole nother negotiation.
Right. Yes.
It sounds like, do brands take advantage of, say, a model, right? Who, okay, it's, hey, I'm going to give you $10,000 to do this, which is, say, the normal rate of whatever campaign this is. Mm-hmm. $10,000. But we also want you to do TikToks every day. We want you to be posting on, you know, Instagram. We want you to do stories. Are they just giving that away for free, or is that just something you have to do now? Should they be charging for that too?
I think that most agencies are going to charge for that as well. But at the end of the day, at least for me, when I am on set, I typically do make content and share what I'm doing and what's happening. Because at the end of the day, I'm a content creator too, and I'm sharing my life and what's happening. I don't, especially like when I think about it, I wouldn't nickel and dime certain brands because I enjoy working with them too. And they're providing like a level of value as well, because this is content, this is my day and I'm sharing it. But in terms of like, if it's something with super specific deliverables, which happens 100%, but there's a fee associated with that. And there should be.
For sure. So you got the company, you got the product, you got your little flock, right? Things mm-hmm. are happening.
Yeah.
When can you take a deep breath and go, okay, we got enough money in the bank to last us a couple months. Like, maybe we can hire two people to send out emails so we're not sending the emails out ourselves.
Right. Like,
when is that? How far along in your journey does that happen?
Oh my God. I don't think I'm there yet. I don't think I'm there yet, because every day there's like a new fire to put out or something going on or something that needs to be done. So I'm not breathing yet. No.
So talk more about that, because I don't think it's easy to look at you and go, she's got it all. You know, she's got a following. She's beautiful. She was a model. She has these fancy friends, right? It's easy to go, you know, she ain't working, right? She just slaps her name on. So it's good that we, A, heard the story that, no, this was not a white label, which, behind, hey, guess what, guys? A lot of people just do that. A lot of your favorite
they do, yes.
just slap their name on a product and they don't even care what's in it, right? So it's good to hear
exactly.
that story that, hey, no, I'm invested. But what's an average work day look like for you?
Like, yeah, I mean, it varies. Like a lot of times it depends. You know, if it's for me, like a content day or a creative day, I'll tend to focus on that in the morning. I do most of my best work in the mornings. So I'll usually block off time from like 8 to 1 p.m. to just focus on content. After that, oftentimes I have like a sync with our team. I'll have a call with our digital marketing team, a call with our social team, usually touching base on something there. Usually take some time to edit in the afternoon. So every day is a little bit different, but I'm usually trying to slot like a lot of my mornings for content and the afternoons for calls is like my ideal setup. And then I also have children. So they're in the mix too. So it's juggling a lot of different things.
You know, so how is, I mean, I have two kids, two daughters too, so I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Your work life definitely changes, right?
Yes.
What I've found is I'm probably more productive, even though I have less hours in the day to work. Like,
yeah,
it teaches you kind of how to prioritize and not waste time mm-hmm. on, you know, little things. Or talk about your work life before kids and after, and how it's changed, and has it changed for the better? Just talking about specifically work.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like you said, your time, you just realize how valuable and how precious your time is. So if I'm taking time away from my kids, then whatever I'm doing had better be worth it, and I better be efficient at it, and I better be good at it. Because I'm sure you get it when you're wasting time, or whether it's a call or whether you go to an event and you're like, oh my God, this is a waste of my time. Even if you don't have kids, you're like, bummer, that sucks. But I'm like, no, I chose to be here instead of spending time with like the little people who are like most important to me and like fill me with so much joy. So I have become a lot more cutthroat with my relationships, with what I do with my time, with work, because it really has to be worth it. But I think it's a great thing.
I just tweeted this the other day and I was really thinking about this, about saying no.
Mm-hmm.
There's such a guilt. And I, you know, shit, I'm 45 now, and now I can say it and not feel horrible. But there's still some of that. When I say no to something, there's some guilt, right? But again, all these successful people I've interviewed, they say no to most requests because they have to, right? People are coming at them for something, and I'm sure you too, right? They want something. I want a picture with you. Can you tag my product? Can you sit down for an interview, right? That's what I want. Mm-hmm. Can you do this? Can you do that? So you get used to saying no, and that's part of the gig, right? So you're kind of conditioned to say no because it's been part of your kind of work life. But for the rest of us, it's hard to say no to things because you feel guilty and it's like almost selfish.
Yeah.
But it's not really. It's not selfish. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go to your fucking record release party. I want to be with my kids on a Wednesday night. I want to be up too late. It's going to fuck up my Thursday, right?
Totally.
How do we do that? How do we get over feeling guilty or feeling like we're letting people down when we say no? I think we all deal with that.
I think it feels worse to feel like your life is being dictated by other things or other people. Like that feels way worse to me. Anytime I say yes to something and I'm half-assing it or I don't actually want to be there or in the back of my head, I'm like, I should have said no. That's a way worse feeling than the instant kind of disappointment that could come with when you just immediately say no to something. When I'm immediately like, no, and then I feel bad, I'm disappointing someone. That is way easier to get over and to process than when I'm somewhere and I'm like, I shouldn't be here. I knew I shouldn't have done this. This is a waste of my time. That is way worse. So you have to kind of do the hard thing first, but you'll thank yourself later.
Let's talk about motherhood because I can't be the only person who didn't know about the postpartum anxiety. Now, you know, I have two kids. I have a wife.
Yeah.
You know, I've kind of seen I get the depression part. That's pretty common and well known, right? But the anxiety, I've never heard of until I heard you in another interview. Shout out Lauren and Michael Bostick, Skinny Confidential. Mm-hmm. I love those guys. But I heard you talk about it on there. Explain to me kind of what that is and how it felt and how you dealt with it.
Yeah. Like you said, I felt like postpartum depression is something that's really wide known. A lot of people know about it. And I was really anticipating that when I had my first daughter, I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to get it. It's going to happen to me. That did not happen to me. I was awake 24 hours a day. I was almost, you know, I felt like I was on some sort of like hard drug or stimulant. Like that's what it felt like to me. Not that I do hard drugs, but that's what it felt like to me. I literally was like, oh my God, like my heart was constantly racing all the time. Like I drank a million cups of coffee. And what was really hard about it was I was constantly having super intrusive thoughts. I would picture the most horrific scenarios, like walking in the street and letting go of my stroller on accident or a car coming by and hitting us or somehow we're all falling down the stairs. I would wake up with nightmares and my daughter was tangled in the sheets with me. I mean, I was just vibrating with anxiety. And I was never sleeping at this point. And it wasn't even because of her. I just was so awake and so nervous and so anxious. And a lot of times it wasn't even about her. She would be like asleep. When she finally started sleeping through the night, I'm like, I'm glad she's sleeping. I'm not. I'm awake here roaming around the house, just so caught up in my own anxiety. I couldn't breathe. It was really hard. It's even hard to remember it, which Mother Nature does that to us. You can't even remember what it was like. And it's funny because with my second, I didn't have any of that. It really was just like situational. And for some reason with my firstborn, but it was debilitating. And I would try to explain it to people and they really didn't understand. Other women would understand, like, but then it's hard because women are like, oh yeah, I had that. And they're like, oh yeah, I had that. And you're like, so we're all just walking around losing our minds for the first 6 months that these children are here. And then eventually you forget. So, and then you get pregnant again. So that's how that happens.
That's another thing too, that as guys, you know, we're not aware of as much. I kind of knew it, but the mom shaming, right? The hate from other moms, which I totally, on paper, it doesn't make sense at all, right? We're all in this together. We all had kids. We all had sleepless nights, right? You know, breastfeeding. Oh my God. Don't even get started with the, you know, saying you're not breastfeeding your kid. I mean, you will be shamed from the hospital and everyone else out there on social media.
Right? Yes.
But talk about like, where does all that come from? Like, what was your experience with that? Do you get hate? Like, will you get DMs if you take a picture of your kid and somebody doesn't like it? Like what's it like from your end as a mom?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with breastfeeding, there's definitely a lot of societal pressure on that. I think moms also put pressure on themselves. We can't help it. I always would be like, I don't know why this, I can't let go of this, but like, I feel so much pressure and so much anxiety about making sure that you're doing the right thing for your kid. You know, you want them to be healthy and put them in the best situation that you can. And yes, whenever I've spoken about that on social media, you get judgments from both sides, right? There are women who are like, I breastfed my kid for 5 years and that's what you should do. And that's what everyone should do. And then you get the other side of women who are like, oh my God, like stop putting pressure on women that they should breastfeed. If I was sharing about my breastfeeding journey, you're making everyone else feel guilty. And I'm like, you can't win. You really can't win. But like, I feel like with motherhood, it's like one of the biggest things that you truly just have to trust your gut and intuition. And only you can know what's best for your kids. But I think also now that I have two children, it isn't just about one kid. It's about the whole system. Your family truly becomes a system that is very intricate and many moving parts. And only you can know what's going to make that function best. And you just have to like tune everything else out. Because what might work for one person, it's just not going to work for you because they have a different system.
Talk to young moms right now. So the young mother watching or listening to this, right? I'm surprised they're still here because, you know, we're 45 minutes in, right? They probably have other things to do. Maybe they're listening on headphones. But who are getting it from all angles, from their mom to their mother-in-law, to their sister, to their cousins, to people on social media, to friends from high school on Facebook. Everyone's coming at them. Basically telling them whatever they're doing, it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you have for them? Or like, how can they deal with that? It seems to me who have never, I've never obviously been through that. It seems like an awful existence for just people coming at you negatively. It almost seems like when you're very vulnerable and you just went through like a very intense experience, right? Like you don't need this in your life. Like, so how do they deal with that? Do you have any advice?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing when I even found out that I was pregnant, the first thing that I did was I started reaching out to my friends who were pregnant or my other friends who had kids. And you really need to start building up that quote unquote, like it takes a village. Like you have to craft your own village and find people that you align with, someone that your life, you say, they think you do think that they're doing it well. Maybe you want to emulate it. You appreciate the way that they parent or function in their lives, but you really need to surround yourself. Like motherhood truly is a hood. It is a club. And you really need to find, like, there ain't no hood like motherhood is one of my favorite lines. And you got to find your people and you got to surround yourself with them and they will come through for you so hard after you have your baby, when you are postpartum and when you need someone. Like you have to create that support system because yes, like you said, there's a lot of negativity. There are a lot of opinions that you're not going to want, but you have to surround yourself with the people that you do want to hear from and they will come through for you.
Finally, we're almost out of time. Talk to the young, you know, mom who wants her own thing, who wants to be an entrepreneur, who wants to be like Emily, right?
Yeah.
Talk to them.
Oh like, my gosh. Do you have for them? Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm talking to them, but I'm talking to myself because I'm like, I also need the pep talk or the coaching. You know, I think for any mom, it's like, if you want to start a business or you have a business right now, just be realistic about your expectations and what you need to accomplish in a day. I think people underestimate, you know, what they can get done in a year, but overestimate maybe what can be done in a single day. But I always just try to keep it really simple and really realistic in terms of like, these are the three things that I can accomplish today and keep the ball moving forward. Sometimes I feel like I'm kicking it forward because I'm like, oh my God, like it's so hard to keep things moving. But as long as I'm keeping things moving forward, then that is doing enough. And you have to remind yourself of that. And to surround yourself again, like other women who also have businesses are trying to kind of do both things. Like that's really important because sometimes if you're only surrounded by working women who don't have children or the opposite, maybe it's stay-at-home moms who don't have a career outside of being home with their children, you know, you're not going to get what you need. You need to surround yourself with women who are like you, who are trying to do many multiple different things in different categories and buckets and get that support.
What are your non-negotiables? What's on your, you know, these are my three things that I'm going to do no matter what. Right. What are your non-negotiables in an average day?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I think for me, it's prioritizing my children and making sure that they're set up and being well taken care of and their needs are being met. The second is my husband and making sure that, like, again, it comes back to the system and he's very much a part of that and making sure that him and I are aligned, that we're communicating clearly, you know, him and I have weekly meetings where we go through everything on our laundry list of things of life, which is everything from family to travel to career to what we want to do this Saturday night for dinner. Like, you know, we really focus on that as a unit. And then what comes third for me, which is probably should be number one, but I think all moms will get that you don't always come first, is like focusing on my own wellness and my own fitness and making sure that I'm well and functioning the best that I can for my career, my husband, and my children.
Talk about that last point, though. That's very important because I think a lot of moms, and my wife is like this too, it's like she takes care of herself last.
When
I'm like, hey, go take a nap. I'm trying to tell her, go work out. Like, I got the kids, you know?
Yeah.
It's almost like a guilt, at least with her. I don't know, do other moms get this too? Like, you feel guilty for taking care of yourself?
So guilty. You feel so guilty. It's so funny. My husband said something so simple and I was annoyed with it at first, but then I was like, it's so true. He was like, you feel guilty no matter what. You might as well earn it. I was like, what do you mean? He was like, at least do something fun or go somewhere so that you're earning guilt. You feel guilty when you just like go for a walk, like at least go do something crazy and earn the guilt. And I was like, wow, that is a really good point. But moms, we feel that guilt no matter what. Unfortunately, I have never met a mom who is free of it. Put it that way.
The hardest job in the world, for sure.
No, definitely.
Well, this has been fun. Talk about Covey. Where can we buy the product? Where can we follow you? Promote.
Yeah.
What do you got going on?
You can follow me at Emily DiDonato. Covey is just at Covey on Instagram and CoveySkin.com if you want to go and check it out.
Can we give away some Covey products? I don't know.
We definitely can. We can give out a routine, the full gambit.
Oh, wow.
Let's do it.
Well, let's see. Follow Emily and comment on my Instagram post from this story. At Tom Ward Show. So just comment on the post and we'll give away the kit and you'll have a beautiful
time. Yeah, let's do it.
So guys, thank you so much for watching. Make sure you subscribe. New interviews every Tuesday and Wednesday, or Tuesday and Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. It's time to level up. Thanks, guys. All right, guys. Now we're going to play Level Up in 10, where we ask 10 questions designed to help us improve our lives. Today, we've got entrepreneur, just badass Emily DiDonato. And my first question to you, Emily, is how can we teach our partners to take better pictures of ourselves?
I would say that ask them to take a million photos. More is more. And that you need to be the art director. If you want a really good photo, you got to set the scene, choose the spot, set it up so that he cannot get anything wrong. Just make sure they can stand there and push the button.
What are some simple tips we can do to improve our skin?
Simple tips to improve your skin. Well, number one, less is more. I think we always think that you need many steps and complicated routines and products. I will plug the Covey routine, a really great cleanser, our Next Up vitamin C serum for the evenings. You can use our Sleep Hypocuchial, and a really great moisturizer, our last but not least moisturizer. And of course, every single day, use an SPF because that is extremely important. But less is more.
Now, if you wanted to start a new business in 2023, what would it be and why?
Oh my God, I was just talking about this with my husband. I would create a greeting cards business because, wait, someone's going to take this idea because it's such a good idea. I always, whenever it's Mother's Day, someone's birthday, you know, whatever it might be, I always have to run out and get a card. And if I had this greeting cards business, I would input every single birthday and special event that I have. Christmas, birthdays, anniversaries, parents' anniversaries, whatever it might be, everything goes into one place. And then my gift cards and all of my cards get mailed to me once a year. So I will never have to run out and get a card.
We're going to leave the audience hanging. I want to delete that answer and just tell them her idea is so good, we're not even going to let you hear it. That is such a great idea. We shouldn't even share that.
I know. I shouldn't, but no, I did.
It'll be funny too, because like we won't even have the answer. I'll just say like it's too good to share.
I might be working on it. Maybe I should do it.
What advice do you have for young people who want to get into the content game?
Young people who want to get into the content game, just start. You have to just put yourself out there and put out one piece of content every single day, small or big, just one thing. Get the momentum going.
What are some podcasts and or books that we should check out that you're into?
Podcasts. I love the Skinny Confidential. I love the Tim Ferriss podcast. I love Boss Babe podcasts.
How can we look better in pictures? Are there some poses we can do other than just kind of standing there with our hands by our side? What can we do to look better?
Yeah. To look better, make sure you stand up straight. Make sure your neck is nice and long and elongated. make sure your hands are not super close to your sides. Give your hands like a little bit of space so that we can see your waist and kind of your figure. And make sure that you kind of elongate your limbs as much as you can.
What is your favorite diet to lose weight but also be healthy?
My favorite way to do that is, my biggest thing is to make sure that I eat as much protein as I can, which is usually just as much as you're supposed to have, because getting protein is really important. And lifting heavy as you can, because that muscle growth is so important. And I think women think that we shouldn't do that, but you should.
Unfortunately, we had our level up in 10 was level up in 7. My camera ran out of juice, so I apologize. So next week, we'll get back to 10 questions for level up in 10. Make sure you subscribe and turn on new notifications. New episodes every Thursday at 10 a.m. Thanks, guys.